Hello and welcome to the Fit and Fabulous podcast with your co-host Greg Theron.
And Gillian Davis. How is everyone doing? How are you all?
Awesome.
Cool. Well, we are back with another episode and we've got another fantastic guest with us today, Michelle Barnes, who is a national bodybuilding competitor and coach and is based in Arizona. I hope I'm getting that right, Michelle. Is that correct?
You are. Absolutely. Yes.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming along, Michelle. And, you know, Greg and I are very interested and we're fascinated by the whole world of bodybuilding and the competition side of it. So we'll kick off, first of all, just to give us a little bit of background about your own story into bodybuilding and what you do now and how you kind of started it all.
Right. Okay. So, well, fitness for me started very, well, kind of early on, more so in my 20s. Due to my background of how I grew up, I was never able to participate in sports and that sort of thing, but I always had this hankering to be an athlete of some sort. And so I started looking at all the fitness magazines and stuff, and I was just always wowed by the physiques of the females that I would see. And I just thought, whoa, how do you achieve that? And is it even achievable, you know, or is it airbrushed or something? So needless to say, in my 20s, I, you know, started working out. I remember I started by reading this book called Body for Life. And I believe the author's name was Bill Phillips. And it was this transformation that you could undergo within 90 days. Yeah. You know, if you changed the way you ate and you incorporated his way of working out, lifting weights and cardio and that sort of thing. So that's kind of where I really started with the whole journey into trying to build my body to be a better version than I currently was at that time. And through that, as you guys know, I'm sure with your own journeys, you know, there's a lot of trial and error that occurs at the, as you go through that process. But that's kind of where I started. And I'll stop there because I don't want to be too long-winded on that. But yeah, so that's where I kind of started. And I dipped my toes in the water. And then I was hooked.
So when did you do your first competition then?
So, not to be very long-winded again, but I didn't have all the tools that I needed, meaning the knowledge to take my body from that initial phase of, wow, I see improvements and this is great, to, whoa, I just did the damn thing, you know what I mean? So I got a little discouraged. I ended up getting married. And he wasn't really into the whole going to the gym. So I kind of let it go for a few years. And then, like most people, I found, but I always still had that love for it, right? Mm-hmm. But then I found my way back to it because I found myself in a situation where the writing was on the wall with that marriage. And I really wanted to rediscover myself again because fitness for me was so empowering. And I felt like I had lost who I was. So in 2011, I went back to the gym. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was just so, I felt so out of place, like a fish out of water. But I knew that that was where I needed to be. And so that work, that day started with like a 20-minute workout because that's all I could do. Mm-hmm. And then I went to my local grocery store and got what I thought was like a healthy meal at that time. And from that point, 11 months later is when I did my first competition, my first bodybuilding competition. And I compete in, there's different levels within mm-hmm. bodybuilding. And I compete in the least muscular division. It's bikini.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But bikini has turned into be, what I'd like to say, what figure used to look like back in the day, That's what Bikini Now looks like. So bikini girls, don't get it twisted. They can carry a significant amount of muscle and look very impressive. So I ended up doing my show, like I said, less than a year later. Mm-hmm. And I showed up and showed out, honey.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm very proud of it. So I ended up winning my first competition. And then just the whole journey into that was so empowering. And I was hooked on that, too. So that's the background to that. Wow. Oh, and I was told I couldn't. You know, anytime you're told that you couldn't or you shouldn't, is a very motivating factor. And my ex-husband is a lovely individual, but I remember one day I came home and I said, hey, you know, my body's changing, you know, at a great rate, and I'm feeling really good. I think I want to do, you know, a bodybuilding competition. And his reply to me was, you've had 4 kids. No one wants to see that. He said on stage, he goes, trust me, as your husband, I don't even really want to see it.
Wow.
I remember going into the bathroom and I just said, oh, okay. And I went into the bathroom and I cried. But then it turned into like this level of anger where I was thinking to myself, okay, I can show you better than I can tell you.
Yeah.
And I did.
I love that.
Wow. Yeah. That's what you said, take an energy and turn it into something else, huh?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. For sure.
I guess I've got a lot of questions from clients, and I'm sure Jillian's got some specific ones, but I guess on your journey, what's been the hardest part of getting into kind of stage ready leanness? Because I think for most women, they look at maybe someone like you and they're like, that just looks impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think are the things people need to learn to be able to do and get that leanness that you get, that you've managed to get?
Yeah, that level of leanness is, it's really hard to describe what it takes to get to that level of leanness. Anyone can, because I'm a strong believer that if you set your mind to something, you're capable of doing everything and anything.
Yeah.
I don't care what it is.
Amen.
Like if I wanted to become the president of the United States of America, I could, if I really decided that that's what I wanted,
yeah.
You know, because it's just that simple.
Please do it. Please do it.
But yeah. You have to realize as a competitor, if you really want to show up and truly show up, right, you're going to be uncomfortable, because without being uncomfortable, there's no change.
Yep.
And so you're going to be hungry. You're going to be uncomfortable. You're going to have, there's days where I've been prepping for a show that I literally sat on my bed or sofa and cried and thought, what the heck am I doing and why? And then you regroup and you tell yourself, hey, look at the bigger picture. And if other athletes can do it, you're no different. Wipe the tears away and make it happen.
Yeah.
But you have to be accountable too. Like you have to be accountable to reach your own level of success. But that's in anything.
Mm.
So it is hard. Your nutrition has to be extremely dialed in. And that's where a coach, I feel, is imperative, because any good athlete, or they don't even have to be an athlete, but I mean, you could be a person who wants to be an entrepreneur. You need to have some sort of coach, some sort of accountability in place to keep you in line. But it is a whole different animal rather than someone who's just trying to get leaner, to have a healthier, more fit physique and lifestyle. That's a different level of lean than competition lean, because competition lean It may look good under the lights, but you're at your most vulnerable and unhealthiest state. So that's why competitors who try and stay competition lean year-round, they're doing their body and themselves a great disservice by trying to hold on to that look. And if you look at my Instagram, you'll see that my body morphs into all different looks because I recognize, you know, the need to pop back. And I don't always do it right, you know. When I come off of a show, I give me all the food, all the pancakes, all the food. And that's not the best way to go about it either.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. Shoot. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah. I think, I guess, I guess the question is like, what's the roadmap? So what's your typical roadmap from, let's say you've got a show in, I don't know, 12, 16 weeks.
Oh, okay.
How do you ramp up your training and then dial in your diet? What is your typical, I'm not asking for every set and rep, but just from a...
No, just kind of like a little small high level blueprint.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So typically, hopefully by that point, you'll know what your maintenance calories are. And for your audience who may not know what maintenance calories are, those are the calories that basically you eat daily that will neither make you lose weight or make you gain weight. They just maintain your physique right where it is.
Yep.
So it's important to know what your maintenance calories are. And then from there, you can create a deficit one or two ways. You can create it through calories by dropping them a little bit, or through cardio or combination. It just depends on the route you want to go. If you choose to just solely do it through diet, then that obviously means you're gonna eat a little less. If you choose to do it through diet and cardio, then that means you get to continue to eat a little bit more, but it's a little bit more time consuming because you have to invest the time in cardio, which I think, by the way, just sidebar, I think cardio is imperative to have as part of your workout routine, whether you're competing or not, because it's obviously great for heart health. And then as far as workouts are concerned, my lifting protocol doesn't change. I continue to try and lift the same level of weight and reps, because that's how you preserve your muscle through a cutting phase, meaning being in a caloric deficit to drop body fat. Because if you lower your intensity with the weights, then you're not challenging the muscle as much. And that's where people will see that they begin to lose muscle mass. And you also want to do it in a very slow process, as slow as possible, because that way you can maintain it as much lean body mass as you can by the time the cut is over. And then lastly, I would say, if you are incorporating cardio, that you don't just immediately jump into doing an hour of cardio in your cutting phase. That's something that you want to slowly implement and increase as you need to.
Yep.
Does that?
Oh, that knocks it out of the park.
Cool.
Yep. And so that's basically what you do, and you just have to stay very accountable and diligent and consistent.
Cool.
And you say, and you will say no more than you say yes. So many
things. I love that.
Brilliant. Absolutely. And is that like 3 times in the gym doing a weight session, 4 times a week? What would be
your go-to? I love to work out. Working out for me, for some people it's a chore. For me, it's probably the best part of my day. Mm-hmm. So I could probably work out a little bit less than what I do, but I typically will work out anywhere from 5 to 6 days a week, meaning lifting weights, because I like to split my muscle groups and up and work them at least twice a week. but I limit my left sessions to an hour. I actually set a timer so that I don't go over it because that's how much I enjoy it. And, yeah. And then from there, I do just a little bit of cardio, you know, give or take, depending on where I am in my season, if I'm prepping for a show or in my off season where I'm just kind of trying to maintain, but gain a little bit more lean body mass. Yeah. And then, I try and have at least one day that's a recovery day. But mm-hmm. for me, I call it an active recovery day. I really believe that you should try and stay active daily, because not only is it good for the body, it's good for the mind. Right. And so an active recovery day could be something as simple as just stretching, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, maybe a light walk or something, nothing too stressful on the body. But I think activity is good.
Yeah, definitely. We would wholeheartedly agree with you there.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not saying something too cray.
Not yet.
We bang that drum a lot, don't we?
Good. So, and don't eat any carbs. No, I'm just kidding.
Don't
throw something crazy in there.
And then, so you mentioned, so you train each muscle group twice a week. Is that what I heard?
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Yep. I try and, I have a little split and I change it up, but yeah, I try and challenge the muscle groups twice, because as a physique athlete, you're trying to build your best physique for your future competitions that you hope to compete in. So, you know, the only way to do that is to really, challenge them. Challenge those muscle groups with some real regularity. Can you do it once a week? Absolutely. And it all goes back to your goals. If I have a client who's a gen pop, general population type client that never wants to compete and they just want to build and tone and shape and that sort of thing, then I'm not going to dictate that they need to work out 6 days a week. That's overkill. They could easily do it in 3 to 4 weeks and get to their goal that they love for themselves. Mine are just a little bit more competitive.
Yeah.
Of course.
You know, it's a space that I compete in.
And it just highlights the necessity to compete. You do have to be willing to go to those levels, and it becomes, it becomes your life, doesn't it? So it's,
For sure. Yeah. And that's another thing. You have to be very careful to keep the balance, with your life and your friends and your loved ones, because it can kind of overtake you if you're not careful. And I've had that happen too. And you don't realize it while you're in the thick of it, but you see it afterwards, because then people are like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad your show's over. And then you're looking at them kind of, huh? What do you mean? And then they go, oh, you were horrible. as far as like, that's all you talked about. And, you weren't any fun.
Is that because the people, the general population don't understand that this is your work? So it's the same way as they talk about Maggie from HR who pisses them off.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about the struggles that you're going through when you have to hit your protein target or training sessions don't go so well. So is that just the difference in understanding or outlook?
Yeah, I mean, if you're not walking in a competitor's shoes, it's hard to understand what it is they're trying to achieve. It's just like a gen pop client who has decided that they are going to change who they, not who they are, but change their nutrition habits and their workout habits, and that they're really going to commit to a healthy fit lifestyle. Well, now that means that you can't eat cheeseburgers for lunch every day and still expect to meet your goal. So can you, does that mean you can never have a cheeseburger? No, but that just means that you have to show up prepped, you know, and ready to go. Because I like to say, and I forget the author, I think his first name's Antonio, but I can't think of his last name, but you know, a goal without a plan is just a wish. And yeah. So you have to show up prepared, to execute. And so, you know, people may not understand that. And what I have found is that it makes people very uncomfortable. Even if I'm not competing, I still try to be mindful of like what I eat and that sort of thing, and alcohol and everything. That's not to say that I don't like, you know, processed foods and alcohol, because I do, you know, and anyone in fitness who says they don't, they're lying. But I mean, it's true. But with that same thing said, it makes people uncomfortable because I think it highlights for them what they're not doing.
Yes.
And make them feel bad about themselves. And so then it's crazy how all the focus can then be honed in on you. And then they start telling you, well, I like my pizza too much. So yeah. My wine, I ain't ever going to be able to do it. When they're secretly thinking, can you tell me how to do that? Because I really want to do that. Can I do it with some sort of balance so that I can kind of have not quite give up one, but I can also have the other, you know, hopefully that happens
to you guys. Yeah. It's like it's a reflection. It's testing their identity, isn't it? It's like, mm-hmm. when to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Cool. But, you know, with that whole process, what has been great for me is that it's really challenged me to dive deep into researching nutrition and weight training, and just really understanding all the nuances of just everything, even gut health and hormones and you know, looking at blood work and being able to decipher it. And those are all the things that as a coach that I do for my clients in order to help them, you know, meet their goals, because it's greater than just, hey, eat this amount of carbs, fats, and proteins, go lift these weights and do this amount of cardio. It's really deeper than that. And the learning never stops, as you guys know.
Yeah. Awesome. I was chatting to Greg before this, and I was like, oh, because I saw your post about the blood work, and I was like, oh, because it triggered my little scientist head in me, because I have a previous life of being a scientist. So, and I was really interested into how thorough you actually go to with your clients in terms of the blood work. And the thing is, like over here in the UK, it's not really... it's probably not as easily available, I guess, or as more obvious for people to be able to go and get blood work and things like that. So it's probably not a common practice over here compared to maybe over there it is. So, you know, what sort of, you know, just to appease me, what sort of blood work do you do and things, and what do you sign up for?
So I think... in bodybuilding, I think getting blood work is imperative, you know, because you take your body through so many extremes that it can really just jack you up hormonally. And it's important to be able to recognize and to address those issues that occur, like with a thyroid, you know, it down regulates. And anytime you're losing weight, it doesn't work as well as you would want it to work, because, you know, our bodies are so smart and they protect us from ourselves, you know, from all the craziness that we'll do in order to drop body weight. But out here, and there's not a lot of coaches who necessarily ask for blood work. I think that that's kind of more of a relatively new thing that you're starting to see. And I think the coaches that coach at a very high level and are trying to truly do the best they can for a client and help them optimize every aspect of reaching their goal, that those are the ones that you'll see that will take the time to educate themselves around blood work and learn how to read it and that sort of thing. So out here in the U.S., it is fairly easy to get blood work. It's very expensive, and that's where you run into the issue with clients in asking them to get it, is that it can be quite costly, you know, out of pocket. But some of the things that I will ask for, I always want to see, do you want me to give you a list of things? Is that?
Yeah, I'm just interested in what you asked.
So I'll ask for like free testosterone, total testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, fasted insulin, A1C, fasted glucose, a full thyroid panel, like I mentioned in my post. So I'm looking for, you know, reverse T3, free T3, free T4, TSH. I even want to see the antibodies to see if a client might have Hashimoto's or some sort of autoimmune disorder there. And then also usually with Hashimoto's, you know, there's typically some gut health issues, some underlying issues that we'll see there. Cortisol, a full CBC, ferritin, CRP, DHEA, cholesterol, you know, with HDL, LDL, triglycerides, leptin, iodine, you know, vitamin D, magnesium. And those are just some of the ones that I ask for, because in totality, they all tell a story. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you a quick example, like a client. I also, on the side, just so you know, I work for a pharmaceutical company, and I work in the oncology space, and I've done that for 22 years. So sometimes I'll be like patient, client. but like a client can be estrogen dominant, right? And so on their blood work, their estrogen may look like it's in a normal level. Their progesterone may look like it's in a normal level. But when you look at the two and do a little bit of math, you can quickly find out if that person is estrogen dominant or not. And if they are estrogen dominant, which I've been estrogen dominant before, I need to actually get new lab work done, because I can tell through this mini cut that I'm currently doing that I feel like I've just about corrected it, because what you'll see is a client will hold a lot of lower body fat in their hips and in their buttocks area. And you can just kind of tell that they're a little estrogen dominant, and it can be the same thing with guys too, you know, with their estrogen level, especially if they're on hormone replacement therapy.
Yeah.
You know, have the estrogen converting or the testosterone converting into estrogen at a higher level than you would want to see. So those are just some of the things that I look at. My favorite though is around insulin.
Yeah.
Cause that's huge. Cause if you have a client that's been slamming carbs, and I love carbs, there's no issue with carbs, but sometimes we can overdo it. You know, they can very easily become insulin resistant and be on the road to being either borderline type 2 diabetic or becoming type 2 diabetic. So, mm-hmm.
Well, hyperglycemia.
Yeah.
Nice. Mm. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's so many questions I want to ask you now. I'm trying to make sure we keep it
Sorry.
Concise, yeah. No, these are awesome questions. Go on, Jill. We got.
No. I was going to say, do you shoot on with your? Because I know the ladies in your group had a lot more, didn't they?
So, what's your approach with kind of your Gen Pop clients? Like, so you, if me or Jillian said, right, Michelle, can you coach us, please? What's mm-hmm. kind of your process, and how do you get them set up to win, and that kind of stuff? What's your framework?
Right. Well, so first I want to know what their goals are, right? Like, because everyone has different goals, and I can look at you and I can have my own set of goals for you, but it's important for me to know what do you want out of this process, because it's your time, your effort, your money. Yep. No, I'm just like one of the tools in your tool chest. So, I have an intake process that I do, and part of it is I have a stress assessment form. And so based off of the questions on that form, it'll tell me whether or not I think that I need to request blood work from them. Not all of them need it, but mm-hmm. based off, you know, the assessment, I may or may not ask for blood work. And then from there, you know, I want to know realistically how often they go to the gym now. When was the last time they dieted? Do they have an idea of how many calories they're eating? I may ask them to track their calories for at least a week so that I can get an idea of what their maintenance calories are. And when I ask them to track their calories, I'm like, hey, don't change anything.
Yeah.
Don't, like, if you drink 3 Cokes a day, don't start all of a sudden now you're a water drinker. If you don't ever drink water, don't change any of your habits, because you're going to do yourself a disservice. I can only help you if you're as transparent as possible and as, you know, just honest.
Yeah.
And so that way I can just kind of see where they are. I also ask them to, we do weekly check-ins. So let me backtrack just a little bit. Through my coaching portal, they will check in daily, and it'll ask about, you know, their energy level, their sleep, their water intake. Did they deviate from their nutritional plan? Those types of questions. And then once a week, they will upload progress pictures and then submit everything to me, and it'll all get wrapped up into one big report. And then I'll sit down and I'll look at it. And that's kind of how we, you know, really get started. And, you know, I do explain to them that weight loss is not linear. You know, it's almost like a roller coaster mm-hmm. ride. You'll have ups and downs depending on, gosh, you know, the scale can fluctuate based off of so many different things. So we do utilize the scale, but that's only one metric that we use. We use other things to track progress, and it's kind of a learning curve for a Gen Pop person, especially if they've never had a coach before, you know. And I could just keep going with that, because I utilize a concept called flexible dieting.
Yep.
Where it adds, I mean, the what it is in the name, it's flexible. So that it offers a person a very flexible way of eating and meeting their goal or goals.
Yeah.
And I'll stop there, because I could continue to go on and on and on.
No, do you know what, though? I think a lot of that is really, really important, because as with the clients that come to me and Jillian, they don't expect that level of detail, and they're kind of like, oh, why do I have to do all of this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't really understand. So I think this is awesome. I'm loving this. Like, people listening to this, will, it just reinforces the message that there are so many things to look at when you're trying to improve your health.
Yeah, and it can be overwhelming at first, but, you know, I think you have to set the expectation, because if you don't set the expectation, then, you know, chances are a person probably won't have the outcome that you want for them and that they want for themselves. It's just like, if you're my friend and I don't set the expectation around the friendship, and then you do something that I don't like, and then I get all twisted up about it, well, who's that really on? That's on me as your friend. So that'll be on me as your coach. If I haven't set the expectations and said, hey, you know, depending on your level of knowledge around, you know, counting macros and flexible dieting, there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve. My programs that I put together are highly customized. I hate cookie cutter approaches. Mm-hmm. I've had that done to me in the past. And once I put two and two together, it still ticks me off to this day. And it's one of the main reasons why I did, you know, decide to be a coach, because there's so many, and this is going to, I'm very, just say it like I shoot straight from the, there's a lot of shitty coaches out there that they don't care about people, and they don't care about, you know, getting their results. And if they do get results, they only want to get the results so that they can get more people, like they can go show them and then get more people. And they just cut a lot of corners and just try and give everybody the same thing. So that, 'cause it's all about the money. And I hate that, but my plans are customized to the client. And I also will put together supplements that I recommend based off of blood work or just, you know, the goals that we're trying to achieve, because I believe in functional medicine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't have to take anything I recommend, but, you know, to optimize their results and stuff. It's a full comprehensive plan.
Yeah.
And I think that's important that you set the foundation that, hey, this is not going to be easy. Like, there's work involved, but mm-hmm. how bad do you want it? You know, if you keep spinning your wheels in sand and you're finally ready to spin out and go for a ride, then it's going to take work.
Yeah.
And it's up to you.
Amen.
Yeah,
like, I can't lift the weights for you. I can't, you know, eat the food for you or put the fork down for you. You got to do it for yourself.
Yep.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I'm going to be doing it for me.
Love it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, that leads on to my next question, Michelle. So what is a typical, you know, meal, and, you know, what does your nutrition kind of look like even at the minute? Are you?
Yeah. So I flexible diet. What's interesting about flexible dieting is that it offers a lot of flexibility and freedom with nutrition, as long as you truly understand nutrition. And I tend to not eat the same things every day, yet I eat the same things every day because I'm a creature of habit. And what I mean with that is that, like, I tend to eat the same types of foods every day, food items, but I mix them up in different ways.
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example, and keep in mind, I'm doing like a mini cut for myself right now. So it may not sound like a whole lot, but then also everybody's body's different, and, you know, you have different requirements depending on, like I said, what your goals are. But let me think. So yesterday I made like a breakfast sandwich, and I used whole grain bread. I did egg whites. I did like turkey bacon, and I did a little bit of cheese, like a low fat cheese.
Yeah.
And some people would go, oh my gosh, you're eating processed, you know, cheese, and you're eating bread and all of that. But what they fail to understand is that, you know, as long as you're in a calorie deficit, you will lose weight, period. You know, the law of thermodynamics.
Mic drop.
Yeah, like, you will lose weight. And because a calorie is a calorie, you know, it's a unit of energy, period. Where it makes a difference is the calorie source, maybe the source of that calorie, you know, when we talk about the different thermogenic effects of food, but that's a whole nother thing. So anyways, I had that for breakfast. And then also like a golden kiwi fruit. I also love berries, so I'll incorporate that too in the morning. Nice. And I'll have my morning coffee, and I use coffee creamer, the sweetened one, because that's what I like. And then after I work out, so that's morning, and then I typically will go work out like 2 hours later maybe. And then when I come back, my post-workout meal has been an assortment of veggies, because I love veggies, love salads and that sort of thing. So I'll do veggies, I'll do grilled chicken, and then I might have a side of sweet potatoes or white potatoes, because I just like that.
Oh, you can't eat white foods. I'm joking.
What did you say?
Well, you know, people get really upset if you have white foods, white carbs and all that stuff.
Oh, please. Yeah, no, I eat regular potatoes. I'll eat white rice, you know, whatever. Is it because of the whole insulin thing?
Yeah, but that's a whole nother subject.
The spike of insulin, a whole nother thing. And that's just silly, because whey protein and protein can spike your insulin just as quick, just as high as bread or white rice, but whatever. You know, knowledge is power. So
yep.
Go educate yourselves and, you know, whatever. So I also love, when I say love, I have a situation when it comes to popcorn. Love, love, love popcorn. So sometimes I'll eat that veggie meal with the chicken, and then I'll have popcorn, like low-fat popcorn that's cooked in the microwave. And people freak out about that too, but popcorn's a great snack because it's full of fiber and it's very filling and it's just full of crunchy deliciousness. So do that. And then I might have a snack in between there prior to dinner, and it might be some fat-free or low-fat Greek yogurt with some homemade granola that I make and a few berries, and I sweeten it with stevia. And then lastly, for dinner's always a toss up. I may make like a healthy pizza, load it with veggies, or I may do a lean steak or just some sort of lean protein with a veggie of some sort, maybe broccoli or a salad with a low fat dressing, and sometimes a carb. It just depends. It just depends, like a yellow potato or something.
Nice.
Yeah. Awesome. So very, it's an enjoyable way of eating, and it's a sustainable way of eating that also helps you meet your goals.
And I'd like to reiterate to any of the ladies that do listen to this, this is Michelle in a cut. So this is Michelle in a deficit eating this amount of food. So, because it, I'm sure if you had it all laid out on a table, Michelle, people would go, you eat how much? And look at that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. One of my new favorite meals, I want to put it out there. It's going to sound so weird, but it's so good. So if I am going to go to the gym within an hour of eating, I want some really quick digesting food items. So I'll do instant mashed potatoes, and then I'll do egg whites with a little bit of the low-fat cheese. And it's so and so I just mix it all up, and it's fun. But
I used to have it. My mom used to feed me that when I was a kid. It used to be mashed potatoes and egg, and used to mix it together with some butter.
So good. Yeah. It's yeah.
No comment. I'll try it. And I'll see what happens. Yeah, I'll try it.
Well, I have to tell you exactly how to do it so that it tastes the way mine tastes. But we have this seasoning at this one grocery store, and it's a butter garlic seasoning. Ooh. And you put it in the mashed potatoes, so the mashed potatoes taste, you know, kind of buttery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Little garlic, and then the egg whites with the cheese. Bomb.com.
I'm gonna WhatsApp you for the recipe, yeah?
Yes.
So I guess, I mean, for me, there's, I've got maybe two questions. I'm going to try and make them fit in the 7 minutes because I know Julian has to go. But yep. What's the biggest mistake and the biggest message you can give to ladies who are trying to embark on that journey? What's the biggest thing that you would advise them on?
I would say stop yo-yo dieting. Stop crash dieting. Mm-hmm. Stop trying to diet too often. Yep. What's the underlining word that I keep saying? Dieting. Mm-hmm. Like, it's okay to diet, but I think that, like, and I don't have the publication or whatever to back this, but I've heard it numerous times that women have a more extensive dieting history normally than men do. Yes. So it goes way back for females. And we just diet. And I think it's, you know, obviously because of everything that society tells us that we're not good enough unless you're skinny or lean. And that's unfortunate because beauty comes in all shapes and colors. Can I get an amen?
Yeah, but, amen.
But I would just say, you know, fine, if you are going to diet, you know, you didn't get to where you are overnight and you're not going to get to where you want to be overnight. You need to find something that's sustainable, that truly can be a lifestyle, and that you can be consistent with. And the second biggest thing that I would say is to implement resistance training. I think a lot of females, especially Gen Pop, they're worried that they're going to turn into looking like men if they lift a weight. And what they often don't realize is women who look like men that lift weights, they typically are taking stuff and are enhanced, and that's how they start looking like men. Mm-hmm. And once you start weight training, it's the single best tool outside of nutrition to redefine and reshape your body. And it'll also allow you to eat more, because the more muscle you put on your body, the more calories you burn doing nothing, and it's a win-win.
Yeah.
But don't be afraid to lift weights, because nutrition and weights go hand in hand. You will not look like a guy. And if anything, you will get ticked off at the fact that you're not putting on muscle like you thought you would. And then you'll start praying that you could. So.
Yeah, you're not going to turn into the Hulk. Over.
No.
Your bicep.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
But right. You'll feel it. You'll feel it.
Yeah, and it's so empowering. Yeah. And it's so freeing too. And the confidence you get. I mean, I remember when my body started changing, and I'm not a person that's like, I don't have a big head and I don't think I'm all that. But for a brief moment, honey, I thought I was really something. I was just like, ooh. Did my butt really just grow in a positive way here? Are those shoulder caps I'm seeing? Is that a little abs that are poking through? I was feeling really good about myself.
Yeah. And why not? And why not?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Right. So you know that I'm going to have to try and get you on again. I think this has been awesome for me anyway. I loved it.
Yeah, awesome. Michelle has been... It's been a breath of fresh air coming on and sharing your story with us. So,
well, thank you. I would love to join you guys again. It's truly been a pleasure and an honor that you would want to sit and listen to me ramble on. This is truly a passion of mine, and I absolutely love being a coach and being able to help people be the best version of themselves. And it's just a blessing. So thank you guys for having me.
And yeah, absolutely welcome, Michelle. Absolutely welcome. And, you know, thanks to Greg and the two of you for getting this set up as well. So, but just the last thing, for anyone who wants to know more about what you do and to follow you and become, you know, one of the people that, one of your followers, where would they find you, Michelle, and where's best to kind of reach out to you?
Okay, so on Instagram, I'm Michelle Barnes NPC. You can find me there if you want to follow me. If you do, shoot me a DM and tell me that you started following me based off of this podcast. And I'd love to connect with you that way. If you have any questions, I'll always do my best to, you know, respond and help you in any way I can. Also, if you want to check out my website, it's called boldbodyprep.com.
Nice.
And you can connect with me there, or you can always shoot me an email at Michelle. Well, not at, but Michelle.
Yeah.
At boldbodyprep.com.
Nice.
Awesome.
And then just the last quick question. What's your favorite leg day exercise?
So if we're talking quads.
Yep.
I love leg press.
Oh.
Yeah, I really love the leg press. And then if we're talking glutes, I would have to say hip thrust. I have a love-hate relationship with those, but hip thrusts are really good.
Nice. Thank you.
Yes.
Cool.
Thanks very much, Michelle.
You're welcome. Thank you again.
Yes.
And I was going to wrap up there, Greg, and just say, if there's anyone who's listening, then, you know, do subscribe and obviously leave us a little review and tell us what you thought about this episode. And we'll catch you on the next one.
Awesome. Talk soon, people. Bye.
Bye.